Good morning, everybody. So we've just started a series entitled It's All About Jesus, which is actually pretty broad. So when I was kind of thinking and praying, I felt drawn to the story of the blind beggar Bartimaeus. So that's what we're going to look at this morning. It's a very, very short story, or kind of a short kind of event which happened, but to me it kind of there are quite a lot of things in there which kind of teach us about Jesus literally, but also speak to us metaphorically in it. So I'm just going to read it out. It's Mark 10 from verse 46. Then they reached Jericho, and as Jesus and his disciples left town, a large crowd followed him. A blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. When Bartimaeus heard that Jesus of Nazareth was nearby, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." "Be quiet," many of the people yelled at him, but he only shouted louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Then Jesus heard him. He stopped and he said, "Tell him to come here." So they called the blind man. "Cheer up," they said. "Come on, he's calling you." Bartimaeus threw aside his cloak, jumped up and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" asked Jesus. "My rabbi," the blind man said, "I want to see." Jesus said to him, "Go, for your faith has healed you." Instantly, the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. Or it could also read, "On along the way." So, kind of a little question for you guys. What do you think it would have been like to be Bartimaeus back then in Jericho, just outside Jericho? Just throw some thoughts out. What would it be? Terrible? Why is that?
He was obviously blind, poor, probably.
Yeah.
Just had to scratch around for a living.
Yeah.
Probably disregarded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lonely.
Yeah.
Outcast.
Hopeless. Yeah. Sorry, there's two. Abandoned and vulnerable. This is a broken man that Jesus is meeting. You know, back then there would have been no kind of modern day, even English, support. You know, there's no Braille. There's no kind of guide dogs for the blind. There's no special learning support unit. In the education system, there's no government support. Not only is he blind, but there's a brokenness in that he's a blind and he's become a beggar. His blindness has broken him. With the poor or with the homeless, there's a sad story. He was someone's son. He was son of Timaeus, and it's like, well, what's happened to that relationship? Why is he a beggar? Why isn't his dad looking after him? Is there a broken relationship then? What's gone on? Every parent, wants the best for their kids, and every kind of kid wants to make their mum and dad proud. And I wonder what is in Bartimaeus. For me, if I was him, I'd be thinking of dreams lost, possibly, broken relationships, all the things that have been said, but I'd be depressed. I'd be a man of anger. I'd be hopeless. I'd be feeling humiliated. I'd be feeling like a second-class human being, a cursed human. And he's sitting at the side of the road. The road is where the life happens. And this is a man who just sits at the side of the road. Life is passing him by. Thoughts like, is this my lot in life? I'm living out a sorry, godless existence. Where is God in this? It reminds me of some of the kind of people that I would see, that we saw when we were traveling in India, just poverty stricken, just living out a sorry, sorry life. It's a sad story, the one of Bartimaeus. So Bartimaeus, he then sees... he doesn't see. He's blind. he hears, he hears that Jesus is near. And, you know, within him, I kind of wonder what would have happened. I kind of think, like, you know, he won't know that much about him, but something shifts on the inside of him. Maybe it's kind of just a simple kind of raw hope that begins to rise up. You can't kind of intellectualize it, but something's stirring on the inside of him. And I kind of think, if I was him, you know, would I shout out? You know, would I care too much about what people are going to think? Would I overthink it? Would I be feeling just too sorry for myself to feel like, you know, I want to shout out? But, you know, credit to Bartimaeus. This guy, he finds his cry. He finds his voice. He connects to that thing inside of him, and he finds it. And I think that is it's got to be a heart thing, not a head thing. Something connects to Bartimaeus on the inside of him, and he finds his cry. Simple, raw faith arises, because all the time people are saying, you know, Jesus is saying, who do you think I am? And people are kind of constantly trying to figure it out. But he gets it. He calls Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. So not only is this kind of this heart thing that's going on within him, is, you know, it's not only is it a thing of hope, it's actually a thing of faith. He gets who Jesus is. There are times in all of our lives where we need to not overthink it. We need to not let kind of our intellect or our, you know, fear of what other people are going to say, or fear of like what might not happen. Sometimes just God is stirring something on the inside of us, and we need to find our cry. It's not about volume. But I want to say, do you need to find your cry? Do you need to re-find your cry? Something in your heart is stirring. You think, I need to connect to this guy called Jesus. And a cry begins to, a hunger begins to rise within you. Is that what's going on? Is that something, you know, you in that place? Because if you are, there's the prayer room. Prayer room, I think, is a place to re-find your cry. And it's about, that's one of the things the prayer room is here for, is for us as a church to re-find our cry. Cry out to God. So the people then shout at him to be quiet. I kind of get why they told him to be quiet. I relate to that a little bit, because everyone in the crowd, you know, they're wanting something from Jesus, you know, and if everyone was crying out, there would be absolute chaos. So, you know, you're kind of in the crowd, you think, I want something from Jesus. Well, I want something from Jesus. So you kind of just like, you want to do like, I'd want to do the British thing. I'll just wait my turn. I'll queue up. And some guy is like crying out. And I think, well, this could be madness. You know, so quiet down, quiet down. You know, I get that. But in a crowd, you're a nobody. You know, you don't have any power. You know, you don't have a voice. And it kind of can sometimes feel a bit like that when we're in church. You know, if, say, like someone with a prophetic gifting comes to the front, or someone who, you know, has a healing ministry comes to the front, we can kind of almost go into crowd mentality where we kind of sit there and it's like, pick me, pick me, pick me. And you're kind of just hoping that one person is going to get this special touch from Jesus. And, you know, sometimes it can kind of feel a bit like, well, why hasn't God picked me? Why haven't I got a word? Or why haven't I been healed? Or is that just me? We can easily get this kind of piece of the pie mentality, in that when God is doing stuff, when God is moving and lives are being impacted, you kind of almost imagine, you know, there are 10 pieces of cherry pie to go round, and for everything that God does, that means, oh, there's a slight like bit of grief which happens with me, because that means there's one less pie, one less bit of pie to give out. The truth is, it's a never-ending pie, guys. Completely like flawed thinking. It's the kingdom ever invading, limitless kingdom of heaven. And I would say that God, he doesn't want us to be in a crowd. Jesus didn't want a crowd. Church should not be a crowd. We should never feel like we're in a crowd where we feel like we're nobody and we have no say and we have no voice and we have no power. Jesus wants a congregation. He wants us to be the administration, the administrators of the pie. He doesn't want a crowd. He wants a congregation. He wants a family of sons and daughters who carry his name, who are bringing heaven to earth, who are learning from Jesus and learning to do the things that Jesus did on his behalf. Not people who are sitting there waiting to get a touch from Jesus from some special anointed person. We're the givers of the pie. And there's an ever-ending pie. So then, these guys, the crowd, they're silencing the cry. They're silencing Bartimaeus' cry to God. And I want to say, who or what is potentially silencing and quenching and stopping your heart cry? Because sometimes we can feel this thing rising up in us. Yeah, God, I want more of you. Or I need you to break through in my life. Or I know there's more. And actually things in life come to stop that heart cry. Is it busyness? Is it embarrassment? Is it fear of looking stupid? Is it a sense of deep hopelessness that actually it's pointless to even cry out to God? Is it tiredness? Is it fear of not being heard? Or is it overthinking it? Are these some of the things which stop us crying? Will we allow the crowd? Will we allow the crowd of, the things in our life that can just crowd in on us to actually stop us from crying out to God? Will we allow that? Bartimaeus, good chap, he's a good lad, he only shouted louder. We read in the story, the fight comes and he goes, I'm shouting louder, I'm crying even louder, I'm pushing through, I'm breaking through. He must have felt like a right plonker. It's embarrassing, isn't it? Jesus, just like putting yourself out there. But this speaks into one of the dynamics of prayer, guys. Prayer is like a deeply mysterious thing, and if I had like one, question where I could get like a definite answer from God, I'd be like, God, how does prayer work? Is it like, just explain it? Is it like, the Windows operating system, or is it like, some app, or like, what's it? Just give me like something that I can relate to. Just how does it actually work? It's a mysterious thing. It involves heavenly governance. It involves, there's things around persistence. There's things around angels. There's things around us walking different measures of authority. There's kind of a randomness to it. There's something about intimacy with God. There's so many kind of dynamics to prayer. But this, it speaks into one of the dynamics. Actually, sometimes we just got to cry out, and we just got to keep crying out and cry out louder. Then what do we see? We see Jesus. And what does he do? He stops. Jesus is moved. He hears the cry. He's moved by us. And he hears our cry. A few years ago, I was going through a real low point. Chloe and I were on holiday, and I was basically depressed for most of the holiday, and I felt really stressed and overwhelmed and just anxious about stuff. And I came back, and we had a church meeting, in the afternoon. It was when we met at the URC. And I just remember just thinking, like, I am literally just feel horrendous. I am nowhere in my faith, and God is a bazillion miles away. I cannot, with any kind of integrity, I have nothing to give. And I cannot, with any integrity, stand up the front and say anything about Jesus, because I'm just in the dark. I'm in a dark cloud right now. And I remember going out into the Marlow Common Woods, and I felt like a right plonker. I just knelt down and I cried out to God, say, God, you've got to meet me. I can't stay like this. I need your light in my life again. And it's like everything is black. And I rang Colin. I was like, I can't lead the service, Colin, can you step in? And Colin came and did the service, and you know what, it felt like I was just praying to absolute nothing. I got up and just walked home, just like with my tail between my legs, thinking, okay, well, you know, I've done what I can do. I've released my cry, you know, up into heaven. Maybe God's heard it. And that Sunday I kind of turned up to church, and I just sat there. I was just in my own little world, just kind of just letting kind of things flow by. And Joan Davenport came up to me, and she said, I feel like God's given me a word for you. God just wants to let you know that even though there's a veil between you and him at the moment, that actually he's still there, and he still loves you, and he still sees you, and he's there for you, and he's proud of you. And I just remember, God heard my cry. And God was moved by my cry to move someone else to come and encourage me. And I just remember just kind of God, through the worship, just again, it's like the kind of unexplainable thing, just kind of waves upon waves, just God just beginning to meet me and renew my spirit in a way that didn't make sense in my head, but you just know it deep inside. To me, the crowds and Jesus kind of speak of success. So, you know, the crowd is like Andy was saying, like, you know, successful ministry. But as we see here, and as we see again and again, Jesus is, his attention is drawn away from that to the insignificant, to the unloved, to the forgotten. And that's the God that we have. That's the God of Christianity. That's the God that we worship. The God who draws aside and stops for the unlovely, the one that no one else cares for. Jesus is a big fan of the underdog. And as I was reading that, I kind of thought, do I allow myself to be stopped? Jesus allows himself to be stopped, but do I hear the cries of the underdog? Do we hear the cries of the underdog? Do we allow ourselves to be stopped? Because being present is a really, really holy thing. It's really easy to do, but it's really, really difficult to remember to do. So right now, we could all be, just let's be present, okay? Let's stop kind of analysing whether or not this is a good talk, or if God's saying anything, like, you know, through the talk. Let's hold our hands out like this in a fist, take some deep breaths, and let's just kind of, in our minds, just imagine any worries, concerns, things that we're thinking about in the future, things that we have to do, or things that we've been stressed about that have upset us. Let's just let go of all of those things. Just let go of your hands. And we can just be present right now. Not think about the future. Not think about the past. But just be completely present, knowing that we are completely surrounded by the love of God. There is nothing right now in this moment that could change how significant we are, how loved we are, how treasured we are, how surrounded we are by the love of God. Nothing can separate us from that. Being present, stopping, is a holy thing. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. It really is. You can carry on or stop as you like. The hardest thing is to remember to do it. But what we see here is Jesus. He stops. He zones in. He becomes present. And the challenge to all of us is, you know, will we allow ourselves to be stopped again and again? Sometimes just to be us and God, but sometimes actually, will we stop with the cashier at Sainsbury's? And instead of just thinking about all the stuff we need to do and, you know, let's just be present. And just, wow, you are a dearly loved person that's made in the image of God. Could I do something right now in this moment that could express the fact that God just loves you to bits? Can we stop when we're with our families and we're at home, when there's worries and the concerns and the stresses? Can we just be present and go, wow, this is a holy thing. Heaven is all around us if we have eyes to see. Can we stop with the big issue seller or the beggars on the street? Aren't there many in Marlow? But will we allow ourselves to follow Jesus and stop for the forgotten people? It's the easiest thing to do, but it's the hardest thing to remember. So then, people say, come on, he's calling you. He threw aside his cloak and he came to Jesus. I want to say right now, I want to ask you right now, is Jesus calling you? Have you been distant to Jesus recently? And is he calling you closer? Is he calling you to come to him? Is there a pull? Do you feel that pull in your spirit? If so, then how do you respond? Like, you know, are you going to be sluggish about it? Are you going to drag your heels? Are you not going to re-respond? Or are you going to be, am I going to be like Bartimaeus? It says he jumps up and also he threw aside his cloak and he came to Jesus. His cloak was not for warmth. It's very, very hot there. His cloak was his income. It was his begging. He'd lay it out. It was his unhealthy, over-dependence on others. Bartimaeus took a big risk. Let's continue to take risks, to celebrate risks. But if we are to respond to Jesus' call, to actually go face-to-face with him, to go from calling and hearing from a distance, actually to go face-to-face, are the things which are unhealthy in our lives, which is unhealthy in Bartimaeus' life, that we need to throw aside? He threw aside his cloak. Is there anything that actually, in order to kind of step to that kind of closer place, that we need to throw aside? You know, do we drink too much to relax? Do we waste too much time and get distracted on too much social media? Do we have disordered attachments to wealth, success, power, comfort? Do we have bad attitudes? Are we judgmental? You know, God is looking for us to be completely free from sin. Definition of sin, which is my favourite, is a Jewish one, which is the culpable disturbance of shalom. So you're guilty of disturbing God's shalom, God's peace in your life, in the lives of others, in creation. That's why God hates sin. He wants us to be free from that. It's like, does it damage us or does it damage other people? He's wanting to be free, completely free. That's what Jesus came to do. That's what he modeled, freedom. What things are damaging us and are damaging the people around us, sapping us of life, that we need to throw aside so we can step closer to Jesus? Question, group participation. What does success look like?
Freedom.
Freedom. Harmony. Joy. Interesting.
Peace.
Peace.
Achievement.
Achievement.
Making a difference.
Making a difference. Fantastic.
Less worries.
Unbounded love. Sorry?
Purpose.
Favor. Sorry?
Favor.
Fulfillment.
Contentment.
Family. Sorry?
Jesus revealed.
When I think about success in my own life, one of the kind of the key measures is that it is, am I able to hear what God is saying, and am I able to respond to that? And if that's a yes, then I think that's a success. That's just one thing that I have in my head. Sometimes we need to kind of cast aside our cloaks, some of the things in our lives. What do we need to cast aside? What do we need to kind of exchange, as Linda was saying, in order for us to actually just be able to get in the face of God, hear what he's saying, and be free within ourselves to respond to that? So, is this okay? Okay. So Bartimaeus is now in front of Jesus. And if I was Bartimaeus, I'd kind of be thinking, all right, I didn't think I'd get this far. What next? Hello. And Jesus says, like, what do you want me to do for you? Everybody wants something. In the previous chapter, James and John had said that they wanted to be seated at his right side. Everyone always wanting something. We all want something from Jesus. And if I had like one shot, hey, Dave, what do you want from me? I'm not sure what I'd answer. It's a really interesting question. It reveals like a deep thing like in your heart. I'm not sure if I did figure it out, I'm not sure I'd dare ask it out of fear of like disappointment. I have nothing else to say on that. It's a great answer. He says, Rabbi, my rabbi, I want to see. So he identifies with Jesus as his teacher. So he, like this guy, he won't know much about Jesus. He won't have really listened to him. He won't really have heard him. He just might have heard bits and bobs of people going past on the road. But something, again, has pulled on his heart. He knows deep within him, a faith has risen up. New Christians, old Christians, people who might not yet be Christians, we've all experienced the same pull, that kind of wanting to identify with Jesus as our rabbi, as our teacher. Is it just me, or has anyone else feel that same pull? It's just like, I've just got, Jesus is my teacher. And that's what Bartimaeus, it's the same pull that we all experience. He says, I want to see. This is a safe prayer, guys. It's a safe prayer for Bartimaeus to pray, and it's a safe prayer for us to pray. You know, some things feel a bit scary. Can I even pray this? You know, what Jesus says, no. Actually, we can bring any prayer. We can bring, you know, our most vulnerable prayers to Jesus. For those of us who can actually see, which is pretty much all of us in this room, I think, some of us, we might actually still feel completely blind. We might be feeling spiritually blind at the moment. We might be feeling psychologically just in darkness, you know, with struggling with depression, anxiety, or stress. We might struggle from just lack of vision, just feeling in the darkness, like, God, what is next for me in life? I'm just in the dark at the moment. I'm not sure. There's a blindness. Actually, that's a safe thing to take to Jesus. It's a safe prayer to say, actually, I need you to open my eyes. I need to see the light again. I need to see your light. Jesus says to him, go, your faith has healed you. Instantly, the man could see and follow Jesus down the road. I love the fact that it's his faith that has healed him. And again, faith is something that is, it's a slippery one. It's like, how does faith work? How does prayer work? But there's something about it which is like, faith is the currency of heaven, and it's great because it's completely, it doesn't matter what age you are, how intelligent you are, what sex you are, your marital status, what race you are. We can all have faith. God respects faith. God responds to faith. Jesus heals. We're a church that believes that Jesus heals today. and he heals blindness. I think, how cool would it be if your eyes opened and your first thing you saw was Jesus? With Bartimaeus and with us, Jesus healed more than blindness. He mended his brokenness. You know, as we kind of talked about at the beginning, like, he was a broken man. He would have had desires and dreams to maybe to travel on the road, to travel and to adventure and to work and to have a family, to give, to be a contributor in life, not just to be someone who takes from life. Bartimaeus would have wanted self-respect and to have dignity and maybe even to make his father, Timaeus, proud. This miracle, like so many of Jesus' miracles, had far-reaching consequences into his life. No longer could he beg, over-depend on others. Actually, he'd now need to start taking responsibility and to start living well. And sometimes for us guys, you know, when we've been touched by God, we just can't keep being the same. What's okay in one time is no longer okay in another time. Change needs to happen. Then at the end, he follows Jesus on the way, down the road, on the way. The early Christians were called followers of the way. Mark would have really known that when he was writing that. Barnabas, he followed Jesus on the way. He was one of the first followers of Jesus. Sorry, Bartimaeus. And he had a choice, like, what do I do now? What do I do now? And it's the same choice that we all have. It's like, where else do we go? We can't go anywhere, really. Well, what else satisfies? What else is meaningful? We've got to follow the path of Jesus. We've got to follow him on the road. So those are just kind of a few thoughts, really, that kind of came out. I'm excited about, or I'm expectant, that God's going to do some stuff. So maybe today, you know, you need to find your heart cry again. Maybe there's something within you, it's just, you know, you're just feeling like blind beggar Bartimaeus at the moment. You feel like life is passing you by. You feel broken. You feel forgotten. You feel damaged. You just feel beaten up by life. But you feel like God is far away. And you just need to cry. You just need to find that cry again. Or maybe you're just feeling blind at the moment. Maybe you're just in a place where, you know, it feels like you're blind and you want to see. Or maybe in life it just feels like you're in the dark at the moment and you're not sure which way's up, which way's down, which way's left. Or maybe you're feeling like the darkness, the blindness has come upon you. Maybe you're struggling mentally. Just feeling depressed or anxious or just completely just overwhelmed, just in your mind. I feel like God is going to come and meet us in that place and bring fresh life. So Paul, I was just wondering if you could just play a little bit and feel free to sit again if you want to sit. Keep standing. Let's just begin to engage with God right now, just where we are at. We all know where we're at as individuals. Let's feel free to be honest with God. Thank you. you feel like you want to find your cry again, it's time that you kind of started crying out to God. There's a hunger that's kind of, you know, in your heart, an appetite. I just really like to us to be able to pray for you. And this is a completely safe space. There's no judgment or anything like that in this space. I'd really love you just to do like a really brave thing and just kind of just raise your hand if you feel like, actually, I'm in that place. I need to find my cry again. I need to be crying out to God afresh in this time. You. It'd be great if just maybe some of the people around these guys, let's just kind of, you know, we're all in this together, guys. We could just pray for our friends, pray for a fresh grace to